You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there. Well, hello and welcome to TFM's local watering hole. We're so excited to be coming at you from Barcelona tonight with our bonus show called The Indie Files as we discuss all of the young Indiana Jones Chronicles. And with me for every single adventure is Yancey Evans. Yancey, how are you doing, man?
Doing great, Matt. I love Barcelona. It's a beautiful city. Absolutely gorgeous.
It really is. And apparently it is the place of hijinks.
It is.
So, well, tonight we're going to be diving into Barcelona, May 1917, as Indiana Jones travels there to work with some spies as the whole intrigue between the different factions there in this neutral site happened. So really excited for that. Of course, before we dive in, you can find us all over social media. We're on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM with the entire network. We're on X, Twitter at the 602 Club. And of course, you can find everything we're doing over on our brand new website at tfm.fan. But first, Yancey, as we always do, this episode does actually start with an opening that's a bookend with older Indiana Jones. And I wanted to ask you, you know, we always kind of discuss how they play into the episodes and how well they play and all that. So I wanted to ask you about this one specifically.
Yeah, I think what you're starting to see is that the bookends, I don't think they're necessarily setting up anything thematically. I think they're more or less kind of giving you the vibe of what the episode's going to be about. So it's kind of a comedic intro and outro to the episode, and it works fine for what it's doing. You know, we're getting to the point now later on, I think midway through season two, they just drop the bookends altogether. I think they never really were satisfied in what direction they were going with them. Were they more like thematic devices, or were they just more or less to set the tone of the episode? And this is definitely more of a tone setter one, that this is a comedy of errors. And because, you know, Andy shows up and starts doing a lecture in a classroom, and he actually doesn't even do the lecture. He just tells this war story. And then you find out at the end that, you know, he's in the wrong classroom. So it's all just, you know, and it does go to the theme of kind of some of the futility of all of these different countries working against each other. Sometimes how things are just futile and nonsensical, and it kind of plays into that. But yeah, it's I wouldn't call it a strong bookend, but it does give a few moments of George Howell to kind of shine a little bit. So,
yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me because honestly, this doesn't need the bookend because it doesn't really add anything to the episode other than I think letting us know right off the bat that this is going to be a much more lighthearted episode. And I think that's the thing that I was really interested in discussing with you because we've had a lot of episodes in a row with World War One. And yet the tone of this is just diametrically opposed to everything we've been doing, you know, for, I would say, like the last five or six episodes. And so how does that feel coming out of, you know, such a long swath of episodes that are, you know, very serious?
Yeah, I think it's classic Lucas, because he knows the audience has to breathe at some point in time. And usually Lucas's default is some kind of comic shtick, you know, some lighthearted bit that allows the audience to catch up. Because like you said, we've been dealing with some really, you know, heady and serious topics the last few weeks. And this is kind of like the you know, you get a moment to sit down, relax, have some fun, and just, you know, laugh at life kind of thing. The absurdity sometimes of life. And this episode definitely falls into the absurd.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a really good way to put it. you know, it is a really interesting idea to switch gears here. You know, in some ways, I do think that, you know, it's one of those kind of like, if you were watching these like every single week, there is a little bit of a whiplash because this episode is so slapsticky. You know, I think that's really interesting choice to make. And I wanted, and I think you said it well, in the sense that it's probably a good idea at this point to do this kind of change, right? Just with the tone, you know, and, but I wanted to ask you, does it work? Does it work for you, you know, as you're watching the episode?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't mind taking a, you know, a few steps off the, you know, kind of the path we're going down just to kind of take a break. And I think one of the things I really appreciate about this episode a lot is that it really leans into a couple of things. One, it leans into the era and kind of the slapstick screwball comedies of the silent era, because there are even some bits where the footage is undercranked in a couple of scenes, you know, when the characters are running around like mad. And so it leans into that, but it also kind of, there's also a vibe, and I know Lucas is really big, and I think Lucas loves this era of Hollywood, which is that 30s, 40s era of screwball comedies, especially kind of rom-com type comedies. And there's a lot of elements of that in this episode. It really feels like something that would have come out of the 30s and starring Cary Grant, you know, early in his career. And I think they got the perfect director to pull that off in Terry Jones. And then, of course, Terry Jones brings in his particular style, which, you know, is very rooted in British, the humor of the absurd, you know, because he's from Monty Python. So there's some Monty Python moments in this. And I think as a whole, it all works. It's just, you know, I tend to agree, if you're kind of expecting to continue down the, you know, kind of the path of the trenches and the, you know, what's going on in the World War One front line, it's a little bit of a, you know, it's a massive turn from that. But I think Lucas understands audiences, and especially since you got to realize that probably kids are watching this. So he's got to give the kids a break, you know? And so, I think that's kind of where this is, where this falls for me.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because, and I like what you're saying. Like, obviously, I think George rightly knows, you know, you have to have a variety of, you know, different genres that you're playing with. You know, you have to have a variety of different tones. It makes complete sense that would be the case in a show like this. And, you know, as audience members, no matter what the show, right, there are more serious episodes, there are more lighthearted episodes, there are funny episodes, there are episodes that are meant to make you cry. You know, I mean, that's what a long-running television show is going to do. I mean, you know, even thinking through the work and like something like Star Trek, a long-running series with all the different iterations, or right, you know, you even think of the Clone Wars, right, with, you know, speaking specifically of George and television, you know. And so I think that you rightly called out that this feels like a Cary Grant type of film, like Bringing Up Baby, where there's right, just a lot of almost absurdity happening in the episode, in the sense of the situations that characters are finding themselves in, and the way that they're interacting with one another, and all of that. And I will say that I don't think, for me, this episode doesn't work as well as some of the others have, and I'm not sure exactly why, but something about the over-the-top nature of the humor didn't work for me. I wish that that the episode still had been more lighthearted and fun, but it there was too much absurdity to it, you know, especially with the French and the British the Italian agents that India's working with, like, they just are. There's a level of,
or it's French. I'm sorry, it's French.
Breath, yeah. You know, yeah. That is just too much. I wish that they had reeled it back and allowed the situations to create the humor rather than being so over the top.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with it, because when your premise of your episode is that, hey, you know, we've got this baron in Spain, the Baron of Toledo, who might ally help push the Spaniards toward the Germans. Hey, what's the best way to make this not happen? Oh, well, you know what? We'll convince the Baron of Toledo that his wife is having an affair on him with a German ambassador to Spain. That right there tells you this is going to be, you know, hijinks at the highest level. And what I think it's, for me, what makes the episode work so well, I love this episode. This is one of my favorites. And the reason I love it is because Indy throughout the episode until one moment is kind of like the grounding of the episode. He's the one character that is not affected by all these shenanigans. I mean, he's doing his job. He's doing everything that's required of him to do the job that they need to do. There's only one moment where he steps out, and that's the dance at the end of the ballet, where he has to communicate with the guys through Morse code using his crotch. You know, it's very special. But now you're getting to crazy town. But throughout the episode, Andy's fairly grounded compared to the rest of them. It's all the chaos that's going on around him and all these crazy characters. I just have a soft spot for kind of hijinks and, you know, madcap comedy. So it worked for me, but I understand it's not going to be everybody's cup of tea. You know, it really isn't.
And the funny thing is, like, I enjoy, like, again, I think a great reference is like Bringing a Baby.
Yeah, right. Or what was the other one?
Arsenic and Old Lace.
Arsenic and Old Lace.
You know, type of films, right? It talk about being completely absurd in many ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, very much on purpose. And so, I love those movies, right? I grew up with them. I think they're great and really fun. It felt like, again, to me, that this episode, that if it had been just slightly turned down, you know, because they're at like a 15, like,
oh yeah, no, they're the 11, you know, to use the, you know, to use the reference, the reference, they're at an 11 rather than a 10, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And
they've
so
turned it up to 11.
It very much so. I was thinking about like what this reference is from the Indiana Jones series in general.
Yeah.
And this has so much of the feel that you get in Temple of Doom with Willie and the humor with Willie. This, that really kind of over the top, you know, she is loud and boisterous and everything about her is up to, you know, 15.
Yeah.
And so in that, it's not as though that you know, this doesn't fit within Indiana Jones and what that series has already done at that point.
Right. Yeah. Well, and also there's stuff like in Last Crusade too, where stuff gets absolutely madcap and ridiculous. Like, the fighter pilot going through the tunnel and Indiana's dad look at each other as the burning wreckage. So I don't really have, and also the second viewing of Last Crusade, when Indy pulls out of the box with his dad in the motorcycle and all the Germans kind of fall over in this very campy 30s kind of, oh, they're all falling into the lake in a ridiculous manner. I give Indy there's a lot of ground for comedy and some kind of slapstick references. It's certainly not the gritty, edgy stuff, more edgy stuff you see in Raiders. But I think, you know, by the time they got to the future films, they've kind of moved on and were trying to do some other things. So I think it, you know, Again, it just depends. It's one of those things. It's not, like I said, it's not everybody's cup of tea. I just love the performances because I love these character actors who really just get to chew scenery. Like watching William Hootkins as a Russian ballet troupe leader, just chewing the scenery to ridiculous. And for people who don't know William Hootkins, it's Porkins from Star Wars and Eckhart from Batman, the movie. He just eats it up. He loves it. And I gotta say, what's his face? The guy who plays Dietrich in Raiders. He plays another German, and
he's
that's the thing I love about this episode is the cast is so well handpicked for what they're doing in the episode. So he plays the perfect straight man, even though, you know, there's these crazy things that are going on. He's still the consummate German straight man to the ambassador, who's kind of more the comic relief guy in the story. So I like episodes where the secondary characters get some time to shine, and they really do in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting parts about the episode, of course, is that, you know, we meet Pablo Picasso in the episode. And I thought it was really interesting, you know, that he's in the episode and yet he doesn't get tons to do. Like, he's
going to show up. He's going to show up later. The story he alludes
which makes sense.
To. Right. The story he alludes to about Indy and Norman Rockwell. That's a younger Indy story.
Ah, okay.
And that'll come up later this season. And it's a really fun episode, but that I love the, again, great British character actor, just eating the scenery playing Pablo Picasso. And he's fantastic in the role. You know,
yeah. No, I thought he was great.
When he loses it, like when he just absolutely loses it, because that was Picasso. He was a bit of a fiery, fiery guy. Yeah. And when he loses it, when he thinks he's being challenged, it's just fantastic. And then he simmers down because he realizes Indy's a friend, and it's just, so, you know, it's one of those things. I completely get it. I know it's not everybody's bag. So.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because this episode is one of those where, you know, the other episodes have really had a lot of gravitas to them in kind of like their morals, meanings, and messages, you know. And this one is so much more subtly done in the sense of, you know, it shows the almost the insanity that was World War One. And
yeah,
all of these different factions and the games that they were playing. And yet, you know, when you juxtapose the games that are happening here with the front lines, it's such a weird dichotomy, right? And I think that's one of the things that the episode probably does the best was, you know, we just came from the worst of the worst. And in Indy and what he had been doing. And then this happens, and it's just, it reminds you of the insanity of, like, you know, the world can be at war, and yet what people are caring about is whether or not somebody's having an affair with another person, you know? And just it's so inane in that sense when, you know, hundreds and thousands of guys are dying on the front lines, and most of them don't even really know why. And so I think that juxtaposition is one of the things that does really help the episode.
Yeah, I think one of the scenes in particular where I forgot the actor's name. He's in Harry Potter.
Oh, Timothy Spall. Yeah.
When they're looking at German submarines that are in the bay and they're just having this talk. And the funny thing is you're getting a glimpse into what the world was like before the war. You know, this is how governments would operate and spy on one another, you know, before the war was happening. But there's a war happening right now.
Right. Yeah.
But because they're in this neutral land, you know, named Spain, everything's like it was before the war. So it's this weird kind of oasis of normalcy.
Yes.
Where it's a really interesting juxtaposition when you've just come from the trenches and the prisoner of war camps, and then you come to this where It's like the way the world used to be just, you know, 3 or 4 years ago before this whole thing happened. And that part, it is interesting. And unfortunately, I do think, I wish they played that up just a hair bit more, because I do think it kind of gets lost in the hijinks. I just think some of the hijinks are just pulled off so well that I just really, forget about the problems of the rest of the episode, and I just roll with it.
This is one of those episodes where it's like there isn't as much depth to kind of talk about, but I am like really interested to see just kind of where you land to rate this episode, because it does sound like this is an episode that, you know, you just pull out any time and watch.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, this is, I love this episode. So I will unashamedly give it a 4, but I understand that's pretty high for pretty, I know you won't give it a 4, and I get it. And most people are going to watch it, aren't going to give it a 4. That's completely fine. I get it. It's not for everyone. What I love so much about this episode, I think it's incredibly well directed by Terry Jones. There's some really funny set pieces, like where they're trying to get the note, the love letter into the vehicle, and how is Indy going to get out of this situation? I love the old lady trying to deliver the message to the viewing box, and it's just crazy. You know, it's just this hijinks. I love stuff like that, so I kind of forgive some of the rest of it. Oh, and my favorite scene probably is the introductory scene where they're all talking about what they're doing in Barcelona and who's who, and all that.
It's just this great conversation.
It's like these guys are just talking openly in a pub about, you know, in a bar about what's going on and who's spying on who and who's who. And it's just, yeah, it sets the plate very well.
Let's not worry about who killed who.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's where I fall on that one.
I think for me, this one's going to get a 3. And part of that is actually in our conversation, you know, being able to be reminded that the way in which this episode plays with the episodes previously, in the sense of showing this strange juxtaposition, this weird dichotomy of lives and what's going on outside of the front lines of the war, you know, and we've seen bits and pieces of that in the sense of, like, you know, what generals behind the lines are doing and how they feel about the war. And then you add on top of that, you know, what you see here. It's crazy. I liked that part of it. And I think they did a good job with that. So, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't detract from the series for me. It doesn't make me not want to continue. You know, I think, as we mentioned, it's very important for a series to have ups and downs when it comes to, you know, the type of thematic elements that you're talking about, the type of tone that you have. You know, you need to keep the audience interested, and you need to keep them on their toes. And so that's one of the things this episode really does.
Yeah, and hey, just to let everybody know, if you're watching along with us, next week, your dreams will be realized. The real man in the hat is back. So,
it's going to be so exciting.
So you just take a little break and relax, have a glass of wine, have a couple of laughs, you know, have a beer, have a couple of laughs, and we'll move on. So,
well, I'm excited to continue on. I'm really looking forward to that episode, but Yancey, people want to talk to you more about Indiana Jones, see what else you've got going on. We got a ton of Star Wars stuff coming out to talk about. So where would they find you?
Holy moly, we do. We've got all kinds of stuff to talk about. Well, my handle on pretty much every social media platform is Galandro1. That's GALLANDRO. And then the number 1, that's an old reference to the Brian Daly, the villain from the Brian Daly Han Solo novels. You can also find me on Facebook at just my name, Yancey Evans. There's like 3 of us. You'll figure out which one's which. And then I am eventually going to get to blogging. I keep saying I'm going to get to it, but I am now that stuff is starting to happen in the Star Wars sphere, I think I'm going to start getting back into blogging here. So anyway, that's where you can find me.
Well, you heard it here, folks. So we can keep them all accountable.
But yeah, exactly.
You can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, here on the network, outside the 602 Club, lots of great Star Trek talk with Chris Jones as we're doing a bunch of anniversary rewatches. It's been fantastic. Plus, hey, Strange New Worlds is coming back this summer, so we'll be back to saddle up. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with two shows. One's called Owl Post, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, and Aggressive Negotiations, talking about Star Wars every week with the wonderful and brilliant John Mills. Don't tell him I said so. But thank you so much for joining us, and y'all come back now you're here.